This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. It's a pledge drive edition of the Week in State Politics. Here for our usual review are Becky Gray with the Conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch. Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Portions of the state budget are trickling out from House lawmakers. The full appropriations bill is expected to be revealed early next week and will likely be approved by the full body in the days to follow. What is one very specific item that you're looking for, or I suppose hoping not to see? Rob?
Well, I mean, my dream scenario would be that I'd see something about Medicaid expansion. Obviously, that seems like a long shot. I guess the thing I'm hoping most for is that we'll see some recognition that the state has been underfunding public schools, not just teacher salaries, but public education so terribly. For years, we're way below where we were a decade ago in terms of per pupil spending. I'd like to see some recognition of that. I'd see it be a great start towards finding some common ground with the governor.
Jeff, I'm really looking at the math of this to see if things are going to add up. What we know is the General Assembly has set the increase in this year's budget at about 3.5%. We're also seeing, as you mentioned, some of the details of that budget trickle in. We've also seen perhaps the finance package. The Senate introduced their finance package last week in a committee. We're hearing that the House is going to look very similar to that. So what that entails is some changes to the franchise tax, increase in standard deduction, some other reforms, although minor, to the current tax package. What I'm looking for is to make sure that 3.5% increase in state government is not outpaced by the tax cuts. So, you know, there's two sides to this, of this equation. It's not only the spending, but it's the revenue that comes in. So that's really what I'm watching for as we look at this budget, is to see whether the math is going to work and they don't get out in front of their headlights too far.
Okay.
Or
now,
at all.
Let me just make sure that I'm squaring that correctly then. So if they are to roll back, if they're to offer bigger tax cuts than perhaps we were preparing for, you don't want to see 3.5% growth in spending. It might only be 3.25 or 3
or
2.75.
That they have come out, and both the House and the Senate have agreed to the spending increase of 3.5%. So that seems to be non-negotiable during these General Assembly discussions on the budget. So to make the math work, looking at the tax cuts and the tax package, what I'm going to be watching is to make sure, or just to watch, that it's not bigger than that growth, the growth in government. So the revenue and the spending match up.
And that concerns you.
Well, obviously, I think the idea of cutting business taxes still further, the franchise tax, is the last thing that lawmakers ought to be doing. We've already bestowed enormous cuts on business in North Carolina. We have the lowest rates in the country, or second lowest, when it comes to overall business tax responsibility. We've got, you know, amazing unmet needs in state government. We've been starving essential services and structures for years and years, and 3% isn't even close to what we ought to be getting to in terms of the budget. So I'm very, and if we were going to talk about trying to target a tax relief package at working people, low-income working people, which is always what's held up when we talk about the standard deduction, it'd be much better to go back to a state-earned income tax credit. That'd be a much better way to do it. I'm not terribly optimistic that we'll see much like that from this proposal from the General Assembly, but at some point, obviously, they've got to negotiate this with Governor Cooper, and that's what makes 2019 different from past years.
Yeah, so just, you know, what I was talking about is the math with the budget. You know, what Rob's talking about are policy questions and things, whether they're spending enough or whether they're spending too much or what they're spending on, you know, are kind of the policy questions.
Right, but isn't your math tethered to the philosophy?
Of course it is.
Sure.
Of course it
so,
is.
I mean,
yeah.
Two things
right.
are linked.
Yeah.
We all agree
yes,
the budget
exactly.
has to be balanced. It's, you know, there's no choice there. So the math has to add up.
But that is good that you all agree on that. We might be able to find two panelists that don't agree on that. In some states, or I guess the federal level, it doesn't have to be balanced, right?
Right.
North Carolina is not running a $21 trillion deficit.
We can't. I mean, under our state constitution, it has to be balanced. So we want to make sure that we get that right. And then the policy questions come up, and things like, you know, Rob mentioned the tax cuts for businesses. This franchise tax that's proposed would impact businesses. But don't forget, businesses are the ones that create jobs. This is what has really generated this economic growth that we've had, where more people are working, unemployment is low, those kind of things are what we're really
there's no tie between the tax cuts that businesses received and the, I mean, the businesses are thriving all over the country and in many states with much higher taxes than North Carolina.
North Carolina is a model across the state. Our economy is stronger than other states, and other states are looking to North Carolina to how to do these tax reforms. But it's not just the taxes. Again, you know, it's these big policy questions. It's regulatory reform. It's the right investments and how you do that. How do you grow an economy? And so it's complicated, but getting this budget right is, this is the biggest thing the General Assembly does every 2 years, is spend the revenue that they have. You know, they tax and then they spend the money, and how that money is spent and where those taxes come from is really the key, and I think sets the stage for certainly in the next 2 years.
And in that regard, one last point, it would be nice if we actually had some process this year. Of course, in past years, last year, they didn't even allow proposed amendments on the budget. It would be nice this year if we could actually have some open, transparent debate.
I think we are going to see amendments on the budget this year, and I would note just to a point you made a moment ago, Becky, and I think we've visited this here on the segment before, and it's not in front of me. I can't remember if it's Business Insider. Some publication has ranked North Carolina among the top 5 to 10 states to do business for like 16 or 17 years running, right, which is just to perhaps bring
Site
us together a little bit.
Site Selection magazine had us number one for a year.
Tax Foundation has, you know, we're now, I think, 11th in the country for our business tax favorability kind of thing. There's lots of rankings that have indicated that. But to the Rob's point about amendments and all, I mean, I've been going to the committees this week, the Appropriations Committee, as they're rolling out some of these, and they've been considering a lot of amendments already. And then we'll have the full Appropriations Committee next week, of which that's usually where you see most of the amendments. And everything I'm hearing is that's going to be a very robust system this year.
Process has been better thus far in 2019 than in 2018. I haven't heard anybody say otherwise.
No, and the discussion seems to be with Republicans, with Democrats, some agreements on some things, some disagreements on some things. But, you know, so far it seems to be a very productive process as
Couldn't
well.
Couldn't be worse than last year.
All right, we will move on. A special election in North Carolina's 3rd Congressional District is underway. Early voting concludes today. Primary is Tuesday. A candidate needs 30% of the vote to advance to the general election. Otherwise, a runoff takes place in early July. It's a cluttered field, 17 Republicans, 6 Democrats, 2 Libertarians, and a Constitution Party candidate. This is a firmly red constituency encompassing parts of Greenville, all of Newburgh, Kinston, and much of the Inner Banks. Two-part question here. Who do you think will get the most support come Tuesday, and will it be enough to avoid a second primary?
Well, if you look at things like amount of money on hand and money spending, Dr. Greg Murphy, who is currently a member of the North Carolina House, is way out in front with spending. I think Dr. Joan Perry from Kinston, newcomer to the political realm, is second in the spending. So, you know, if you use those kind of things as indicators, I haven't seen any polling. I don't know that anybody's doing any polling
any
in this, but if you use things like yard signs, I was in the eastern part of the state last week and paying attention
to
who got the yard signs, and then money raised, which we got those reports last week, so we know that now. It would seem that Dr. Greg Murphy is ahead of the pack, but Joan Perry's doing well. And again, I think it's going to be really hard when you have a field of 17
right.
candidates.
And we're talking Republicans here. I didn't specifically say that, but you knew that's where I was going. This Republican district.
Right.
And that's what I wanted you to address. But yes,
sure,
this is a big, cluttered Republican field.
It's
going to
be,
hard
for anybody to get 30%,
so.
Which is the I think it's 30%
right.
plus
yes.
one vote.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the 6 Democrats that are in the field, you know, that may be sort of dicey, too. And then we, you know, because politics is interesting and, you know, who knows until the last minute. But there was also an audit from the state auditor, Beth Woods, that came out this week that was very critical of one of the Democrat candidates who was the executive director of the Global Trans Park, with some real questions in the audit for the Global Trans Park that, you know, may impact this race. I don't know. But we're still learning about some of these candidates. When you have this many, I think it's going to be close right up to the very end, which is soon.
Yeah, I don't have any real predictions about it. Yeah, the primary's over next week. And the runoff, we may even have fewer people voting in the runoff. That's in the middle of July, I believe. Everybody will be on vacation. I mean, it's been a cluster, and it's been, you know, a couple of candidates can rise to the top with one or a couple of big checks from outside people, which seems to have been the case with a couple of the women candidates in the 3rd District on the Republican side. Murphy seems to be the front runner. I thought it was an interesting side note that we heard this week that lobbyists here in the General Assembly can actually give money to these candidates. It gets around the traditional rule that bars lobbyists giving to lawmakers while they're in session, because they can give to Murphy because he's not running for a state office.
It's a federal race, right.
So, and other lawmakers who might be running, and I guess we have a few others, Speciale and a few others. So
Phil Shepard, yep.
Yeah, and it's been, the thing I'm most struck by is just how it's really politics at its sort of most base level. We've got people who are striving just to get attention, doing anything to get attention, running a commercial that's trying to be the most outrageous, trying to be the most loyal to Trump. It seems that they're trying to outdo each other in their loyalty to Trump. So it's really politics at its most base level, and it's going to be decided by a tiny handful of voters.
Now I'm not totally sure what you're just referencing. We have another special election that's going on right now
in the 9th
congressional district.
Right.
There was that
the snake
fairly,
guy,
Stoney Rushing, a fairly outlandish commercial. Yeah. He went down to a swamp with a gun in one hand and some
snake wrapped around his neck.
Is that the commercial you're referring to?
That's one. Yeah, okay. I think there's another one.
Is there
the
one
guy
in the
brandishing
okay.
a gun in the 3rd district? I'm pretty
okay.
sure.
Okay.
You know, you got to brandish your weapons now when you're running for office.
Here's the deal. I mean, the seat is vacant because Congressman Walter Jones passed away. So, I mean, this is the process that we go through. And, you know, I mean, I don't know whether the political process is perfect or not, but this is the way we do things. I'm just, you know,
no,
I tell you what surprises me the most is that there are, 26 individuals who actually want to go to Washington and be in Congress. I mean, that's the surprising thing to me.
A couple of questions on the federal level for you. Joe Biden, with 8 years under his belt as vice president of the free world, 36 years experience in the U.S. Senate, and 76 trips around the sun, is running for president, specifically the Democratic nomination. Best word, one word, to describe Joe Biden.
Joe Biden, I think beloved by a lot of progressives and Democrats, actually. He's sort of viewed as Uncle Joe. He's a character who's, over the years, sort of been transformed by his experience, and you know he remains enormously popular and probably the favorite.
The one word I'd use, really, I agree with Rob, is likable. You know, he's sort of goofy, but you know, very likable. But I think one thing that's interesting about this too is at 76, he is the oldest and most seasoned and most experienced politician, at least so far. When you look at the other candidates or the declared candidates, and this is far from over, but you know, there seems to be this whole younger group. Well, we've got Bernie Sanders, and he would certainly be an exception.
I think he's older than
Is he older than Joe Biden? Yeah. But there kind of seems to be this generational thing represented.
You've got a mayor from South Bend, Pete Buttigieg, who's 37 years old. You got Beto O'Rourke, who's 43, 44. I mean, he's a relatively young
guy. And what will
guy.
Trump be? I mean, Trump's, 73, 74 already?
He was the second oldest president when he was sworn in.
But it seems to me, too, as you see things begin to line up on the Democratic side, this is going to be very much like the last presidential candidate was on the Republican side, when you had so many candidates lined up. That's what that looks like where we're going. I always think the more choices that you have, the better. So far, I'm not sure all these choices on the Democrat side are great, but I think Joe Biden, looking at the profile right now, I would certainly describe him as the most likable of the Democratic candidates.
Sticking with 2020 and keeping your quote of the more choices, the better in mind, we're going to go finally to a Republican with 26 years of experience in the Iowa State Legislature, announced this week that he was switching parties, calling President Trump's spending reckless and his foreign policy erratic. Meanwhile, in Maryland, sitting GOP Governor Larry Hogan announced that he is considering a primary run against President Trump, Republican primary challenge, potentially in 2020. For context, last time that happened, that a White House incumbent faced a primary challenge, was George H.W. Bush in 92. Challenger was Pat Buchanan. Becky, as a conservative, would you like to see Trump challenged in the primary?
I think the more ideas that are out there, the better. I mean, I don't have a problem with President Trump being primaried. I think he is pretty confident that, you know, given any kind of contest, he believes he'll come out in front. I think anytime there's a forum for debate and more ideas and challenges, particularly to sitting elected officials, I think we're always better off with that.
I mean, to me, the shocking thing is that this has taken this long. I mean, Trump is the most dishonest president we've ever had. He makes Richard Nixon look like a schoolboy. He is every day obstructing justice. He is, I think by almost any estimation, one of the worst presidents in United States history. And the fact that it's taken till now for a tiny handful of members of his own party to speak up and call him out. And the fact that we have people like Tom Tillis, who kind of inched off in that direction, got slammed back, and now is doing everything he can to be loyal to Trump, is a pretty remarkable and depressing reality about the modern Republican Party, that there's so little commitment to justice and truth that there's so few people that are willing to stand up to Trump to even just echo the lines of John McCain before he passed away, who said, or maybe Mitt Romney, who uttered critical things about Trump. There's so few willing to do that. I think it's sort of surprising and depressing.
Well, of course, that's Rob's opinion, and he's entitled to it, and
that's what makes the
election process, and that's what's going to make 2020 so exciting and so interesting, and we're probably going to have a lot more to talk about, right, Jeff?
I think that's a pretty safe bet. Rob Schofield directs NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. To hear a longer version of our conversation, head over to our website, wunc.org. Thanks, guys. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you.